Okay, Mr. Evelyn, just so that you know, you stated false on allegation number one, and you pleaded the fifth on allegation number two, so we'll ask you no questions about allegation number two. But because you said false on allegation number one, what was false about that allegation?
The striking of my mother.
Thank you, sir.
As well as the standing over her in a menacing manner. And I do not recall having an iPad in my possession at any time.
Okay, Mr. Evelyn, we're going to move through phase one so that we continue to phase two, where you'll be given a chance to speak to the board in detail, as well as your representatives. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to get through phase one, and that is based on the information provided in warrant number 2017W3061, as well as, information provided by the Department of Corrections. I move to find him delinquent as he violated the terms and conditions of his supervision and that he may have or have lapsed in some way as a company.
Agreed.
Okay, Mr. Evelyn, we're going to move on to the second phase of the hearing. During this phase, we will determine if your supervision should be continued or revoked, but before we move on, please stand by as Mr. Osborne, our community corrections officer, is going to give us additional background information. You'll just remain on the phone. We will come back to you momentarily, Mr. Evelyn. Mr. Osborne, if you will.
Yes. Mr. Evelyn was released from jail this afternoon, August 31st of 2017. He was arrested on September 1st of 2017. The next reason of office on the violation. We turned back to tell you that same day, from 0 to Sunday, the community supervision ended at June 1st of 2017. 15.4 feet. And from aggravated assault 26 months. Prior conviction 2001, manslaughter 5 years. 2001, manslaughter 5 years. And 2012, dangerous drug violation 1 year. He's had 3 terms with DOC as a PU of IR score of 3-3, a mental load score of 2, and a substance use score of 3. There is no NCC or anything in the way. Prior terms of supervision, 2008, absolute discharge, and 2012, guy is continued for 2 months. There's a significant disciplinary history of multiple fights, thefts, assaults, and false requests and notice. Other arrests, 1996, theft of conduct of a minor, AZ juvenile probation. 1998, AZ indicated removal. 2008, DUI of 836 with Congo, Arizona, and his previous conviction for the 2008, stolen property. 2009, parole violation in Washington County. He has a junior for G5, B6, and he has that charge of theft from senior fraud and conflict. It is Friday, October 6th, 2017. It's a further Gilbert City Prosecutor's Office.
Thank you, Mr. Osborne. Back to you, Mr. Evelyn. Just a quick review of your case supervision summary. Seems that when you were released from prison, you were approved to reside with your grandfather, Charles Evelyn, at 895 East 4th Avenue, Apache Junction. It says that you did not establish residence there as directed. You don't have record of employment, so were you working at all when you were on community supervision, sir?
No, that was just the first day I was out, so I hadn't got a chance to establish any kind of employment or seek employment yet. But it is my goal to achieve full employment.
You only had 1 year analysis, which was negative. We commend you for that. We also commend you for making employment your goal. The notation is that you did not establish residence as directed. So where did you live? Pardon me. You said you were arrested the first day you were out.
No, I was arrested the first evening that I was out.
Right.
So, I mean, I wasn't out running around. I went to my mom's hotel room, and that was it.
Well, sir, the charges associated with the case were dropped. There was reference to you having bloodshot eyes and your speech was slurred, so had you been drinking that night?
No.
Well, you have 0 abscond days. You have 1 negative analysis, which is good. You were looking for work. This sounds like an unfortunate situation that ended up in police contact. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you. Okay. Mr. Evelyn, we're going to invite your supporters to speak to the board. So certainly you'll be able to hear this. Keep in mind they'll be addressing the board and not you.
Correct.
Whoever wishes to come first.
Let me ask one question.
Oh, okay, pardon me, Mr. Johnson, yes.
Sir, are you doing anything while you're incarcerated to work on anger management?
I have looked into the programming that's available here, and I did not find any anger management classes available on my unit here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I'll leave it to your choice.
Can I add one thing just pertaining to that? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Is there something else you'd like to add, sir?
That I've been obtaining the Thinking for a Change program.
Are you in that program right now, sir?
Yes.
You're in it. You're not about to have it. It's something you're going through?
It's something that I've already started, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to ask your supporters if they would like to address the board now, so whoever would like to come first. You've all been sworn in, so when you arrive at the podium, if you can state your name in the microphone.
I am Deborah Carroll, and I'm Justin Eagle's mom.
Okay, and what would you like to share with the board then?
I actually wrote something up. But this is very, very unfortunate, very sad that happened. Everything is sad. Going back to 1999, Justin was a kid in a car accident. And he's been in the DOC for 18 years. To say that he's institutionalized is an understatement. And the DOC is not helping myself. And I have real concerns, and that's what I want to share. A week ago, I sent in 5 copies of the incident, exactly what went down that day. I picked Justin up at 7:30 in the morning. 11 o'clock at night, he was put into jail. Have you guys all read that?
Yes.
Because I don't want to rehash that, but I just want to make sure you have the documentation on that, because it's ultra important.
Yes, ma'am.
I disagree with some of what he said. That's okay. It is what it is. I documented that. And, you know, it fully involves me. It really does that night. Okay, so I have real concerns relating to his health, for one thing. For instance, he told me that he has Hep C. He stated that he was monitored every 3 months for it. And he also told me that he has low blood sugar. He showed me a sugar tube that he was given to assist with this. While I'm grateful that my son confided in me about these 2 health issues, I wonder what else he has not confided in, as well as what may have been evaluated or not, such as diabetes. That goes hand in hand with low blood sugar and Hep C. I've also learned that Hep C is known to be potentially contagious. Is he contagious? Why wouldn't there be a required need to know for my parents and for myself ahead of his release? Additionally, along these same lines, are the mental health concerns that we have for him. I don't know what to say of this. I've been here since listening to cases all day. I've been hearing ones, he got a two. It means nothing to me because I don't know what that scale means, so I'd like a little bit of assistance with that. What I heard for him was a two, and his drugs a three. I used to think the same, but I'm really starting to rethink this. I'm really thinking we have a more mental health issue than we have drugs. What I've learned purely accidentally is that he was on a mental health watch for 4 days in March 2017. What does that mean? For what? Why? What was done? What was given to him? What was the outcome? What put him there? This is quite concerning because of what I experienced with him on release day. I could not calm him down. There's no question that his actions that day were anything but rational and balanced. And I truly wonder what else does the DOC know about my son that I should know and frankly needed to know. I do understand HIPAA laws as they relate to individual privacy. However, there should be exceptions when it comes to families and their support of inmates when it comes to known health conditions. I'm not looking to change laws on this today, but I'm seeking understanding of our frustrations and fears. I also want to voice another frustration pertaining to my son and mental health. As I state in my documentation, Justin's being out of control was witnessed by many members of DOC at the department, at the parole offices, at the offices of mental health and DES that day. And I asked for help that day. But essentially, my concerns and statements were blown off. That seems like something I could have obtained help with that day. And if I had, then perhaps I wouldn't be sitting here today. I document that also in my documentation of that day. My issues with his parole officer. When she scheduled that mental health evaluation for 7 days later, I told her we need help today. And she essentially blew me off. Everywhere we went, it was witnessed. And then when I say witnessed, at least 10, 12, 15 people saw what was going on that day with him being out of control. I've had Justin sign a release of his medical records, and I've sent the required payment in to have these to receive them. But I wonder, why was this option not given to me ahead of release? So I could know what's been going on in the DOC with him all these years. What do they know that I don't know? Because I don't know anything. Okay, and my son's being released to me and to my parents in their 80s. Unfortunately, I haven't received them yet, so I don't have more clarity today on the findings. There is one known mental health concern, and it's his ADD. And unfortunately, despite he can no longer watch a TV program or even read a book, there is no help given to him for this within the prison. The reason is that the med required would be an amphetamine, and they aren't allowed in prison. And my understanding is that he couldn't just be called into a medical office to take this much-needed medication in an Arizona facility. They can in Washington State, where I live, but not in Arizona. I'm much concerned regarding this and wonder what else he may be suffering from and what meds he requires to get him back in balance. And that was the one word I kept saying to his parole officer that day. He is out of balance. He's out of balance, and I could not bring him down. The day after our incident, his parole officer called it manic behavior that he was displaying while in her office that day. And asked me if I agreed. Well, I honestly didn't know anything at that time about bipolar. But she certainly got me researching and wondering and again questioning. If she thought that then, why didn't she insist on his mental health evaluation that day? Yes, I'm frustrated. Because my son's situation with me that day didn't have to turn out the way it did because we were ignored. Today I'm requesting that he be entitled a very thorough mental health evaluation before his release to us. But I'm also requesting that he be allowed to be released to his loving family for better care rather than staying within the system that's failing him and us in so many ways. Thank you for hearing my plea today. thank you for this hearing and a voice. I have not had a voice in 18 years. I promise you that. I've done a lot of writing, but I haven't had a voice. And it's very hard to stand here in front of you all. It's very humbling, but it's very necessary.
Thank you, ma'am. I do want to say this really quick, and I don't intend it to be some sort of defense posture. It's just that the parole board is not part of the Department of Corrections, and it is important that you have a voice.
Oh, he is. Okay.
I'm just saying.
Okay, thank you.
What I'm saying is we represent an independent entity, and we have to make a decision on whether or not his community supervision is continued. They have to keep out an education on that. I just wanted to make sure that you understand that there's certain parts of the system that you don't have any control over. But I do hear you. I have one very uncomfortable question. I'm going to be the one who asks it. Was he not arrested because charges were dropped?
Well, no. The cops kind of imposed a little bit there. I'll tell you that. My son, I needed to bring him down. He took off from me. He tried to get out of my car twice on the freeway. I couldn't calm him down. I told myself, I'm going to give him a beer and calm him down. Okay? And that I did. And it worked. Until it didn't. My son didn't punch me, okay? But my son did tackle me on the bed, and we rolled to the floor. He did. He did try to take my iPad and my phone, and I swung the cord and hit him. He wasn't standing in any kind of stance. And then he took off crazy in the hallway. Alcohol, you know what? That's my bad. And I know he wasn't supposed to have it, but I had no one to call. I mean, I'm in the parole office hours, just an hour and a half before that, before he took off from me. And she's saying, like, he can't have any police contact within 24 hours. I can't call the police. I can't call her. I can't call my parents. I don't want to freak them out. And the reason we were in the hotel is because he's getting out of the freeway on me. He got out of the freeway, tried to, twice in rush hour traffic. When I saw my exit from my hotel, I went there instead of risking making it to a patch of dust or whatever.
Thank you, ma'am.
So I did, I play a big role here, and I did wrong. But I did what I knew to do. And I didn't have any help along the way. When I asked for help at the parole office, I didn't get it. And I've never seen my son like this. I really haven't. So I don't know. That's the honest truth.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it. Any questions from my fellow reporters?
You said Johnson. that he's unable to watch TV or read a book.
That's what he's talking. He said, I cannot sit still long enough to watch read books anymore, mother. And I can't even watch TV. That's a problem. He can't focus.
Because it's very apparent in the letter that you wrote that you were trying to do everything within your power to try to calm him down. What was it? And I thought something in there that said about his time confrontation.
Thing that he was asked about. And that's one thing that I was trying to tell him when we were waiting to get into the parole officer that day. I told him, just be nice to her and just we'll deal with that later. But he couldn't. He said, well, the time comp, he thinks the time comp is incorrect. So, frankly, I hired an attorney because I need to set it at ease, whether there's something there or there's not. That was the time comp. He thinks his time comp is incorrect, and so he's mad at the DOC for setting all these restrictions on him. And I could not bring him down from that. A rational person, you would say, okay, we'll work on this tomorrow. We'll work on this later. We'll hire an attorney. I said all that. That did not bring him down. In hindsight, the alcohol. He was fine. We shared a lot. We had a great conversation for hours. And then it brought, we went back to that and started raging again. So not a good idea, but.
Well, he also had, he had the beer that you got him to calm down, but he went into the bar and had a few drinks.
What?
Said he went into the bar and had a few drinks.
No, so I got him at Gulf Cruise. I did. And then he told me, I said, let's go TV, a shower, go to bed. And he said, I'll finish my beer, and I'll be right up. And I got a phone call from the bartender 10 minutes later saying he just had 3 beers in 10 minutes. And so I said, and so by that age, I was like,
so wasn't that much different than the time you were at the parole office when he was upset about his conversation? Because it just appears that once he went off at the parole officer just never really calmed down.
He never did calm down. No. And he was trying to get out of my car twice on the freeway. I even say in my documentation, I don't know how for the life of me I kept him in my car. I don't, the seatbelt on coming and the door open. I mean, on the freeway. Once getting on the freeway and once on the freeway in rush hour traffic, which I guess is a gift because it slowed down. Right? Traffic is slow.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. If you can state your name, then.
Yeah, my name is Jesse Carroll, and Justin is my my brother. Sorry, I'm... So, yeah, this first... sorry. I want to take this time to say thank you for letting, you know, I have a voice, and to be here today. Trying really hard to be calm because it's not okay. So basically, what we've been through all these years has been really hard. And when I say that, I mean from the time I was 8 years old until the time until now, as I sit here in front of you as a 26-year-old woman, it's been a tough and challenging road. Yeah, one that has been insightful and one I'm very anxious to speak on. I don't walk the day. I don't walk today in my brother's shoes, but I, as well as my mom and my grandparents, we've been by his side, deep in the trenches through it all since day one. Every step of the way, that's where you see the passion. Sorry. Justin is our world, and he is as much a part of our family as if he was home with us. That's why right now this is so tough for me to accurately express the sadness and the sheer gravity of the situation. It feels like in the moment my brother was immediately given up on and kind of thrown away to deal with later. The second a mistake was made as a result of spending, in my opinion, so much of his life in a world that has provided minimal care to prevent this kind of situation from happening. I know that he messed up, but I feel like who wouldn't in his shoes? His environment for so long has been true. I know my brother is going to have obstacles his entire life, but he is someone I will never give up on because I know he wants a better life. I know that he has family to support him to make that happen. He just needs the support in his environment to get there. I guess more than my sadness is just some frustration because I have questions and I just wonder if they're being asked. And it's a little bit of a list here, but you know, why has there not been a focus to rehabilitate my brother when instances such as this one occur and outbursts of misunderstood rage show up? Why is it the expectation that families of transitioning inmates are somehow supposed to know exactly what to do when it's release time, and this person returns fully in their life after years of being gone, they change over time from their experiences. Why is there no guidance and preparation for families prior to this release date to better prepare and know what they're about to, know how to better take care of that situation from day one? Why is it that the people who are the professionals and witness what happened, you know, the moment in that office, you know, why did they not take a step back and ask, why did this act out occur? Or what is the underlying cause of this? Instead of what actually happened, where my brother's rage was met without care, and instead institutionalization was the go-to solution. I love my brother, and I know him as the person he was when he first entered the system. In an unfortunate circumstance, yet so bright and good, every determination to make something of himself. However, from being behind bars too long, there are detrimental side effects. And although he's still determined, I feel like prison isn't going to be successful for him or helping him for the good. I love my brother, and I love him enough to want the right care for him. He needs help and to be with his family, not a prison cell. He needs a chance to succeed, and he needs resources. He needs to see that there's hope through the mistake, and that it's okay not to be perfect for the first time as long as it's okay not to be perfect for the first time, as long as the direction he's going in is toward the better, toward being better. And that's what being human is. You know, that's what he is. In my mind, the real help is not prison anymore. It's not. It's coming home and beginning of the healing. This will provide some real answers to what actual help my brother needs in order to have a chance at successfully transitioning back into society. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Good afternoon, ma'am. Can you state your name?
Yeah, I'm Joan Evelyn. I'm Justin's grandmother. We've been dealing with this for years. Justin's been more in prison than he's been out. It's been sad to see a soul in those prison, my grandson. And yes, he does have mental problems. We can tell. We visit him, and he sort of looks out in the distance. Sometimes he just kind of loses it, you know. And we've known all along he's needed help. And like my daughter has said, we've asked for help. It's just not there. I don't know what else to say. I love my grandson. I miss him. Yes, he can stay with us as long as he can if he gets out. But I want more for him. I want him to be able to get a job and get married, have children, and have a life. He hasn't had one. Thank you.
Thank you.
Charles Evelyn, I'm the grandfather. I'll try to be brief. I've always said I'd probably be 2 years younger if I didn't spend so much time in prisons visiting my grandson. He's had a hard time. He's a great kid. We had our house all fixed up for him to take him in for the 9 months or whatever it was going to be. He was going to have his own room. His own bedroom, his own bedroom, his own bathroom. Biggest damn TV in the house, bigger than mine. And I realize you gentlemen are limited as to what you can do, what you authorize. Anything in your power to help this young Phil, would be appreciated. I don't care about the Diamondback to go Cardinals.
Thank you, sir. Almost impossible to find humor at moments like this, but I do appreciate the levity, sir. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Evelyn, back to you. We're getting close to the end of the hearing. Is there a point you would like to share with the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat yourself. I'd say in this case, in the interest of time management, we still have some other hearings. Everyone's given mm-hmm. their fair chance. But is there
yes.
a statement you'd like to make to the board? This is your hearing. And
yes, I would like to make a statement.
Yes, sir.
On that day, I was very upset by my time computation issues. I've looked at it from a few different vantage points, analyzed it, and I have a have a real problem with the way that the Arizona Department of Corrections treats the time computation issues, like as if it's just no big deal. So that's what this all stems from. That's what this is all about, essentially. And what my family has mentioned to you now is the same that I want for myself. I want good. I want to get help. I'm not able to get it in here. They don't prescribe the right medications. I've checked. I've done the whole mental health process here. And the medications they give up, then the medications that they're pushing out are on the blacklist. You know what I mean? They're on the recall list. And it's crazy that they don't prescribe the right medication for me. I do seek employment when I get out. I want to get back out. I want to work. I want to get, you know what I mean? Like my grandmother had mentioned, she said, I want to get married. You know what I mean? I want to be a family man. I want to experience life in a good way. This is, I feel like I've spent a substantial amount of time here. And according to my calculations, I'm beyond 115% of my sentence anyways, because they're treating my CR number, they're saying 2014 manslaughter. No, it's a 1999 manslaughter. It's 1999-09-2743 is the actual CR on that, but they're treating it like a 2014, so they're running it like a new charge or something. And that's where my problem comes in, because I have spent a substantial amount of time under this charge already. And you know, I just ask the board to please take into account everything my family said, because what they told you, that's from the heart. I can hear it in their voices, and I thank them for coming out here and speaking on my behalf, more or less. And I ask the board for a chance to go out there and do it. Now I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna check out the mental health, and I'm sure my mom's gonna help me as much as she can, and my family's gonna help me as much as they can to make that happen. And I think as long as we can do that, everything will be fine. And I'm gonna bust my tail out there. That's what I want to do. I want to bust my tail. I'll do any kind of programming, any kind of anger management classes. In fact, I would like to go to anger management class. I feel that, you know what I mean? That's one of the classes that I'm not opposed to going to. So, unfortunately, it's not offered here, so I just ask that the board, I ask that the board, please, I'm just asking for another shot to get back out. I'm not out there trying to commit crimes, man. I'm not going out there to do that. That's not what I'm looking to go out there and do. I understand that you guys have a responsibility to the general public, and it is your livelihoods potentially on the line. But if you let people out from here and they go out and commit more crimes, I'm not looking to do that. I understand the positions that you gentlemen are in. I appreciate your time, and I thank you for that. That's all I have.
Thank you, sir. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like we're speaking with you, but it is the board discussing the case amongst itself before we come to our individual votes. You're reminded that we don't discuss these cases before we come to board. We're all independent voting board members. So if you'll just remain quiet for a few moments, you can listen to the discussion, and we will come back to you with your decision shortly, sir. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Board's now in discussion. Fellow board members, this is a tough case. I'll just put it on the table, especially as one voting board member, and I won't make this deeply personal, but I do understand the business of people needing help that's falling through the cracks. Unfortunately, this is also balanced with public safety concerns. I do like what I'm hearing right now from Mr. Evelyn. He sounds like a person that can be communicated with. He's got the support of his family, which is important. It's an important statement. I'm not going to neglect it. But I'm in a quandary as to whether or not he is suitable for community supervision based on the way this his first 24 hours out of the system unfolded. That's a concern. That's not a decision. So that's where I'd like to begin the discussion, and I'm certainly open to the input and wisdom of my colleagues.
That's a difficult situation, obviously. I think that this gentleman does need to get some type of mental health evaluation. I just don't know what the best process is, and I have some concern that I don't want him to harm himself if he has a situation with his mom and tried to get out the car on the freeway, and knowing the letter said that he was happy at his grandparents' house with his room, and how comfortable his bed was that he had his grandparents' house, but I just don't know exactly the best way to guard, and there's concern that he needs a mental health evaluation, but there's also some concern that he might cause some harm to himself. I don't know if there's if he was released, if the PO would have the ability to put him in a mental health program. Mr. Osborne?
Are you talking about a lockdown test program where it's not used?
Not a lockdown program, but something where he could get some assistance. That's what the concern is, appears to be with this particular situation. I don't think it needs to be a lockdown program.
I think Louis should make it possible that he has
I was going to say, if I may interrupt, without a court order, I know that one of our choices for conditions is to participate in mental health treatment plan, take medications if prescribed, but it's not, certainly not a confined program.
Banner Health has a similar deal. Yeah, but you walk in, the person has to sign himself in. And in this state, the only way you can get any kind of mental health treatment is if the person wants it and agrees to it and signs for it, unless there's a court order or they're out there, in a rage, hurting people. I don't know, but we see inmates all the time that have mental health evaluations within the system and they're on medication they got after they went back in and that. So I don't know where the best place to be is.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Doctor?
Yes, sir. As you said, this is a very difficult one for a family. I think that I'm not sure that there is, that we actually have the answer to that sitting here, because one of our concerns is, and it's already been expressed, that only what has already been said. This is on protection. You know, I mean, apparently, I use the word apparently, when I don't know whether it was the wife of medication or what, driving down the freeway and he's trying to get out of a car. Something is not clicking at the moment, and I don't know what the DOC does. I think that for him to be out on his own without serious mental health, not just an evaluation, but mental health. It's not going to be helpful to him. I know that his mother and his grandmother and his sister and his grandfather, they all want to do what's best for him. I think that this board has to look at it as well, and I'm not sure that this board has the solution. I think that we have to do the best thing that we think that's best for him, whether that's still to remain incarcerated or what programs that he'd be. Well, we can't tell him what program to go to, but we can recommend him. But I really think that he needs, this is one non-medical person, non-psychologist speaking. I really think that he needs some in-house help. I don't think just for him going in for an evaluation for a day or two, that's not going to happen. I think that's good common sense. He's going to get something that's going to happen in some long-term. And I don't know what I mean by long-term. We're talking about 90 days, 180 days, or something like that.
Thank you, Mr. Board Chairman.
Ms. Osborne.
Yes, Mr. Osborne.
One more thing to help the family. I do know that if they're deemed SMI, why it's on our case, it could be helped set up before they come out. If they have decided to do that, I have to say that I'm not medical. I feel like I have to be here, but
as the panel chairman, I don't think there's anything you can do from the board. I'm sorry if it's the runaround, but that would be returned to the Department of Correction. Fellow board members, I'm going to make a motion, and I recognize it's where it begins as far as board procedure. But at this point, and I'm going to look right at the family because I don't want to be hiding my eyes on this one. This is a tough decision. It's not popular. But at this point, I'm not feeling that we have a safe plan for returning them to the community. That's one voting board member, and that's from the beginning. So my motion is to revoke community supervision as Mr. Evelyn was delinquent, violated the terms and conditions of supervision we had last year. Was about to lapse in some way as a company. That is my motion.
Second.
I just wanted to say, I must agree with that.
Okay, we have no counter motion.
But I would say, Mr. Quinones, that Mr. Evelyn is enrolled in a program now that he said he's enrolled in. And I would strongly encourage him to work with his CO3 and to see about getting enrolled in either anger management or some mental health program, or either get an evaluation so that when he is released that he's able to get out. I mean, he does have a loving parents and grandparents who obviously have been going out and visiting him, you know, that I find that he's been incarcerated, but he needs to get, you know, on some medication where that he can be safely out there and control what's going on within his life, because I'm sure his family don't want to see anything negative happen to him.
Ma'am, I'm sorry. I have to maintain protocol at this point. So, Mr. Evelyn, your supervision has been revoked. You'll be released on or about June 1st, 2018. I recognize your time computation has been a frustrating issue with you, so please talk to CO3 about your current time computation. Please take advantage of the remainder of your sentence to seek any programming or treatment that's available inside the Department of Corrections. We wish you a safe and productive return to the community. There'll be no parole officer or community corrections officer at the end of your flat sentence, and you will have the support of your family. And I recognize that may be cold comfort right now. That's the position we're taking. This hearing is concluded. No further discussion may take place, and thank you for appearing before this board, Mr. Evelyn.
Yeah. I have one question. Sir?
Yes, sir.
One quick question?
Yes, sir.
Okay, in the very beginning of the hearing, you said that there was something pending I didn't quite catch that.
No. It began that we had a notation that there was a department report number, but once we went through the process and heard all the background, it was apparent that those charges had been dropped, correct? So there are no pending charges, sir.
Okay.
It begins with us knowing, we don't know that till later in the hearing. There's a process in the hearing. We're told that there is a pending report number. Then we find out during the second phase what the status is, and what we found out was that those charges were dropped.
Yeah, the charges were dropped, so that's what the violation was for, so I'm not tracking, but, I mean, whatever. We weren't on the freeway anyways, it was in the turn lanes before you even get on the on-ramp, and we were stopped in traffic. We were not on the freeway. Just wanted to add that in. So, whatever.
We appreciate it. This hearing has been concluded.